This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1. I'm David Martin Davies. The state of Texas continues to grapple with the failings of its embattled foster care system, despite a 10-year federal lawsuit that demands a fix. A new report from a court-appointed watchdog details how children in foster care are subjected to unlicensed and dangerous placements, exposed to sexual abuse or engaged in self-harm, administered incorrect or improper medication. Why hasn't Texas made more progress across towards addressing or fixing the problems with its foster care system, even after a decade of legal scrutiny? What solutions have been proposed? And what are the biggest challenges? We do want to let you know that we're going to be talking about some grim reality here about the conditions that these children face. It could be disturbing for some listeners. We do want to hear from you if you have been involved in the foster care system as a child, as a foster parent, someone who has been supervising the system. If you want to let us know what you have seen, what you think could be a fix. If you're a concerned taxpayer, also we want to hear from you as well. The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You could also tweet at us at TPRSource, email us at thesource@tpr.org, and that call-in number, 833-877-8255. You can text us at that number as well. Where this hour, we're joined by Reese Ochsner, breaking news reporter for the Texas Tribune. He's been covering the story. Reese Ochsner, welcome back to The Source.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also with the State Representative Ina Mijares, a Democrat representing Texas House District 124 here in San Antonio. Representative Mijares, welcome back to The Source.
Hi, it's good to hear from you. Thank you for having me.
And also with us, Will Francis. He's a licensed social worker, an executive director of the Texas chapter of the National Association of Social Workers, and a member of the Travis County Child Welfare Board. Will Francis, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me, David.
So, Reese Ochsner, you've been covering the latest developments in this ongoing saga about Texas foster care, about how broken it is and how Texas has not been able to fix it. What are the latest developments?
Sure. So we had another hearing over some of the findings, like you mentioned, from the court-appointed watchdogs, which it was another one of these reports that had just gruesome details of children being neglected or abused within state custody. And so as someone who's covered a few of these hearings, we expected this to drag on for the 2 days it was scheduled for. But about 3 hours in, it ended somewhat abruptly from the judge ordering that there was no reason to continue, that really she heard enough at this point and she wanted to start discussing solutions. And so right now we're in the middle of a placement crisis within foster care, especially within children without placement. And so these are children that haven't been placed in a licensed facility for care. They're being held maybe in hotels and CPS offices and things like that. And we're seeing record numbers of children who just haven't been placed in a licensed placement. And so once we got through that report, the judge ended the hearing and decided that it would be best if all of the people involved in the lawsuit met with the monitors and with the sign off of the governor to start exploring solutions. I mean, she said it's time to cut to the chase and really try to tackle this problem. She's been overseeing this case for 10 years, and she just signaled multiple times during the day that she was just tired of seeing the same problems happen again and again.
So, Reese, we got the facts from you, and the big takeaway with headlines like the judge just said, no mas, we're ending this hearing, we want some solutions. But help me dial in a little bit better about the judge's emotional state here, because this is unusual. Was it, was she fed up? Was she exhausted? Was it a pessimistic resignation? I mean, where do you think her head was at?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to speak exactly what was going on in her head. I do know that the judge's style is very much back and forth. Even during different testimonies or during different lines of questioning from the attorneys involved in the case, she often jumps in and asks her own questions or asks follow-up questions. And really, she's tries to cut to the actual facts. What's happening? What are we doing? What are we not doing? And so throughout that morning, I think it was a similar tone to past hearings in that she just really wanted to cut through any jargon and figure out what's going on with kids, how are kids' wellness being affected. And so when she ended the hearing, it wasn't like a big emotional outcry. It was really her seeming like, yeah, this, I don't know that we will benefit from spending all day just going over these findings. Let's figure out what we can do to help.
Like, she's seen this movie before. Let's figure out solutions.
Yeah, exactly.
State Representative Ina Mahadas, you've been in the legislature trying to come up with bipartisan solutions, figuring out ways to get resources and training and getting lawmakers on both sides of the aisle on board on this. What do you think of what happened just now in this hearing? And we'll get more into what happened in the legislature a little bit more.
Well, I think one of the first things that I am appreciative of is the judge taking a different approach and saying, hey, let's come together for some solutions. What I feared was it would be another repetitive hearing where, you know, she would get upset. The DFPS commissioner, you know, would come forward and essentially there would be no solutions offered, that we would come back again with another report from the monitors continuing to state what the problems are in the current system. So I applaud her, number one, for saying, look, let's get together, let's come to the table, let's figure out solutions, because what's been happening since I've come into the legislature in 2015 has been finger pointing between leadership at the legislature and the federal judge, but there's not been a moment where they can come together as one to actually have honest discussions about what are the problems and how do we start addressing them. What I'm concerned about is who's going to be at the table now. I would love to see former foster youth having some input. I want to see what organizations are going to come forward to have honest discussions so that we can have meaningful reform. I'm tired of coming back session after session and just putting Band-Aids on the problem, putting some funding, but none of it is helping the situation whatsoever. So this has been a very frustrating time. But again, I do appreciate and I'm hopeful that the fact that the judge took a different approach and saying, hey, let's come together for some solutions, I think that says a lot on her part.
We've seen institutions run by the state of Texas in noncompliance for 20 years, like this Texas State Supported Living Centers. They've been in violation of the civil rights for 20 years. Nothing seems to happen there. Are some people thinking they can just continue to limp along?
No, Mike, that's my fear is, look, there's been situations where children have died in these placements. And essentially what happens is it's really not reported on very much. And they get a slap on the hand and then, you know, end up having, you know, they'll make some corrections and then are allowed to continue placing children in their care. You know, this is a situation that it's got to be dealt with. We can't allow children to be placed in dangerous situations any longer.
We're taking a break. We'll come back. We'll continue learning more about the Texas foster care system. Why is it dysfunctional right now? What are the solutions that are being proposed? What's happening to the children today who can no longer wait for a home, a place they can sleep that is safe? The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're looking at the Texas foster care system. We know that it's broken, that children who are in the system leave in worse shape than when they go into the system. That is a finding by the courts. That's not just me popping off there. That is a documented situation. What is happening with Texas foster care system? If you've been involved in it, we want to hear from you. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Will Francis, Texas Executive Director of the Texas Chapter of the National Association of Social Workers, member of the Travis County Child Welfare Board. The problem for me trying to figure this out is that it just seems like a black box. Does this seem like it's really hard for me to see what's going on in the welfare, in the foster care system? What can you tell us? What do you know that is the problem?
Yeah, I appreciate everything I've heard so far. I think Representative Minahara has really hit the nail on the head here, is that we need new solutions because the old ones haven't worked. And this all leads back, I think, pretty far to the fact that we've never really supported this system the way we've needed to. We've only recently really made it a trauma-informed system. We've only really recently started listening to youth in care and really finding ways we can involve the families more. We still have so many gaps outside of the system when it comes to workforce, when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to housing and transportation, all of those danger areas that lead into care. And what you find with these kids right now, who are sort of the ones who are the subject of the lawsuit, are they are the most challenging ones to support in a system full of rules when their survival has really meant them developing their own rules and their own ways of sort of working around things. And so you bring these kids into care who for all intents and purposes, have had to do it all by themselves and really lock them down with a whole lot of structure, and it's just not beneficial for them. And you see them running away, and you see them turning to sort of risky behaviors, and you see them as really tough. And so Texas has traditionally put those kids in these large facilities and just kind of locked them in these big group homes. And now that we've started to close those, and now that we've started to see these kids really push back even more, we're left with a system that just doesn't have any answers. And so I think the only way we're really going to be able to figure this out is to think, how do we support our welfare and social support systems outside of foster care? And then how do we really bring those voices of the kids into this so that we transform the system with their needs in mind?
Reese Oxner at the Texas Tribune covering this. Where's Greg Abbott? What role does he have, and where has he been on this issue?
Sure. So historically, right, this lawsuit's been going on for a decade. And so Abbott's had different points of being vocal about foster care in general. He did place foster care funding on the special session agenda, which it did receive additional funding, hopefully to go toward provider rates and incentivizing more providers in Texas's largely privatized foster care system. Abbott has also told state agencies to go in line with the court. There's been a little bit of back and forth throughout the decade and a little bit of arguing, I would say, on what the problem is. And Abbott said, just do what the court says. And so the judge has actually voiced support for that. And she says she believes Abbott is really passionate and compassionate for foster children. And so that's why during this week's hearing, she called on Abbott. She hoped that Abbott would sign off on her plan for collaboration and that his office would weigh in as well.
State Representative Ina Mahadas, it sounds like with Judge Jack saying, you know, Abbott has to be part of this. He has to lead in this area. Have we seen leadership from the governor's office? He's been in this thing since the beginning. And when, you know, he was on the Texas Supreme Court, he was the attorney general. Now he's the governor. This shouldn't all be new to him.
It shouldn't. You know, in 2017, he deemed reforming the foster care system an emergency item. My hope had been that he would continue placing all of these matters as emergency items every legislative session, that they would get the priority attention that they deserved. I feel, you know, I appreciate him, you know, putting the additional funding on the special session call, but what I hope is that he would have expanded that call to include allowing us to get back to the table to start actually addressing the issues that need to be addressed policy-wise, and that wasn't done. You know, we can continue adding the additional funding, but, you know, that's, again, it's a Band-Aid. It's not addressing the true issues. And one of the things, David, that I think that's important is that this foster care capacity crisis, it's bad. I mean, we're not talking about and highlighting those kids that are being placed out of state. We, at the time that I had last looked, there were about 175 foster care youth that were being placed outside of the state of Texas. I mean, that is a problem, you know, and I talked with the speaker's office. You know, we've been sounding the alarm that is just not acceptable. Those kids need to be brought back to Texas, and we can't continue just finding, you know, small-term solutions and you know, placing them outside of the state. Where's the oversight to be watching these kids? It's unacceptable, and the problem is getting progressively worse, and we need him. We need the governor to step up and be the leader that I know that he can be if he chooses to be on this issue.
Let's go to the phone lines, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We want to get your reaction to the Texas foster care developments and the how it's not working. And if you've been in the system, we certainly want to hear from you. We have Issa on the line. Issa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, you sound great.
Oh, okay, I'm a little nervous. So I am now 36 years old, and I was removed when I was age 11, and I stayed in foster care until I was 18. And I am currently working on a book. So I lived in multiple foster homes, three shelters, and my experience was not so great. I was never diagnosed with anything or had to take medication, but that is one thing that I did witness living in the foster care system. A child could act out because maybe they miss their biological parents, they don't understand fully what is going on, and immediately, oh, that child is defiant, let's medicate them. You know, I've been in foster homes where the foster parents are so young, bless their hearts for wanting to try, but they have no experience or the right training when a child does act out. So right away, that foster child is going to another foster home, and then they just bounce in the system. You know, so I just wish that we can find parents that are willing to go through this experience, because I think what it is, a lot of it, I hate to say it, but I'm going to be honest, a lot of the foster parents, they do it for the money. A lot of the foster parents don't realize what they're really getting themselves into. And this is just me being in the system, what I've witnessed, what I've experienced, you know. And whenever I did cry right away, oh, she's depressed, she wants attention, you know, nobody took their time to rub my back and say, Issa, what's wrong? You know, what did you go through? Do you want to talk about it? You know, most of my foster siblings got taken away because of drugs. Mine was physical abuse.
Issa, I'm going to ask you a question. Do you think the system can work?
Yes, I can. I do think that. I feel like it can work if we get the right people, the right training. If the government did, the governor did step up. When I was in foster care, George Bush was our governor. You know, we got to meet him and share our input with him. You know, so I really do feel that if we get the right caseworkers, I know that they're underpaid. You know, I've talked to caseworkers and try to give them, like, you know, my caseworker came when I got taken away, she had a notepad with a pencil. That scared me. You know, get down on my level. You know, does this child play with toys? You know, does she polish her nails? Let me get down on her level and do that so I can make her comfortable.
Right.
You know, so it's just like I said, I could be here all day giving my experience.
It's interesting, Issa, and I'm really glad you called in and gave us an idea of what it's like to be in the system. And I'm glad that it worked out for you. Will Francis, you're the executive director of the Texas chapter of the National Association of Social Workers. The question of training came up with Issa, and so some of these foster parents, they're not equipped. They haven't been trained.
Yeah, I really appreciate Issa sharing her perspective. I think it echoes a lot of what we hear, which is kids come in and they have certain needs and the system just doesn't meet those needs. And yeah, I think we really can train foster parents better. I think we can always bring more resources there. I think Reese hit some of the nail on the head. There's more money for rates, which is vitally important, because we know that many of these kids do have some high acuity needs when it comes to behavioral health issues and whatnot. I think the training goes well beyond foster parents, though. I think we need to support caseworkers more. The turnover rate is huge over there. And from my own perspective, it's we need to bring more social workers and we need to bring more of that background into there. I think our child welfare system should be less law enforcement focused and more crisis response and more about bringing that social work set of values in there. I also really, really believe we need to support families better. And every single grandmother who's taking care of their kid or every single aunt or uncle who steps up should have their own caseworker. They should be getting money to support those kids. They should have other resources. And we really, really underperform there. We don't have enough resources there. We don't have any caseworkers that are dedicated to those kinship families. And if we were able to bring them some support, we could probably integrate the parents in a whole lot better and really work on that family dynamic more.
Let's go to another caller. We have Stephen on the line. And Stephen, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm a child psychiatrist. I've worked for about 25 years with foster kids. And I have to say the degree of problems we're seeing now is the worst, you know, since I've been a psychiatrist, and which is very tragic. And the difficulty I see right now, the lawsuit led to the closure of a lot of facilities without any new options. And many of these kids have such severe problems, they really can't be managed just in a regular foster home, regardless of the level of the foster placement. And one concern I have is that we need the whole range of services, you know, placement with relatives, foster placements, but there's always going to be a role for residential facilities, you know, albeit they should be very high quality. That's just another aspect of why this problem is going to be so expensive to solve. And we noticed that the problem of kids out of state, well, they're by and large being put in residential facilities out of state because we've had to close our own. A residential facility can be very therapeutic and very helpful if it's run the right way, and as is, you know, psychiatric treatment with medication. We're not drugging kids. Rather, we're treating the disorders that come out of trauma or come out of bipolar or depression or a lot of the mental illness that has run in these kids' families. So we really need this holistic approach. And I'll be frank, it is going to be very expensive. And that tends to be the reason the judge gets so frustrated that she's not seeing, because we're just not putting the money into the system that we need to.
Stephen, you've been doing this for how long? And you say it's the worst it's ever been?
I'm sorry to say that. The children that I'm interviewing.
Oh, we lost a call. The point that he made about sending children to other parts of the country, State Representative Mijares, how does that strike you?
And to find out, number one, that because of the lack of placement and the foster care capacity crisis, they don't have a place to put some of these children with high acuity needs. So they're putting them out of state. But I just want to clarify, it's not necessarily the fact that these facilities are being closed down. What's happened is because of the lawsuit, what's happened is some of these facilities have had some issues. And what happened is they've been placed on what's been called heightened monitoring. And as a result of that, there's not been a way for them to get off that heightened monitoring. And what has happened is then they have said, well, we don't want to take any more kids. So they're still there. These placement providers are there, but they have not wanted to take any more of these foster care kids because of the consequences that they're facing each and every time they have to go before the judge under heightened monitoring.
Right. And Reese Ochsner at Texas Tribune, you reported on this. This is that Judge Jack responded to claims that heightened monitoring and court actions were to blame for the crisis.
Yes. So the judge and both the court monitors have maintained that these closures that have happened under heightened monitoring, as well as the increased scrutiny coming from it, are necessary. I mean, we've seen dozens of operations close, whether the state revoked the licenses or they just decided to close themselves. But the judge is saying, I mean, these are facilities where we're seeing horrific things happen to foster care children. And so they maintain that was a necessary step to happen.
Right. She said not a single facility was closed that had been found to be safe. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation about the Texas foster care system, what needs to happen in order to repair it, and what happens when we don't get it right. The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Cut to the chase. That's what a judge is telling Texas about getting its foster care system under control and in compliance. What is wrong with the system? Why, after 10 years, is it still in shambles? You can call in. We certainly want to hear from folks who have been involved in the system in one way or another. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we have Alonzo on the line. And Alonzo, you're on the air. Go ahead. Alfonso, I'm sorry. Alfonso, are you there? Okay, so that's not happening. Let's go now to Texas State Senator Jose Menendez. He joins us, and Senator Menendez, it's great to have you. Can you tell us about your impressions of what is happening with the Texas foster care system?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, David. And let me say, hello, and also a big a shout out to my colleague in the Texas House, Representative Mijares, who's done a great job on these issues. And let me tell you, here's the issue the way I see it. There has never been a step down. People can go from a high needs facility, and then they're sent home with never having a place that the state can fund to step high needs kids into. And so, you know, I'll tell you that we recently convened a meeting with DFPS and Bexar County leaders, Judge Sakai, Whitman, Children's Court leaders, and they established a special docket for the CWAP youth. And Judge Sakai and the stakeholders addressed every single current CWAP kid in Bexar County in a two-day hearing. The problem that we have is that the heightened monitoring that Representative Mijares talked about is she's absolutely right on target. So many of the providers have said, well, if I'm going to get in trouble, I'm just going to leave. I'm just going to pull out of the system because the heightened monitoring makes it so hard where I can't even do my job. I think that we're sort of having a miscommunication, and there's not enough funding of the right facilities. And the other big problem we have is that kids who are teenagers are getting placements, and they're refusing to get into the car when they're being told, this is where you're going to go. They'll go, and they go, no, I want to go back to the office, because they prefer it in the office where there are no rules and they have to be watched. And so we have a huge confluence of issues that have created this dramatic mess. And the state is spending millions and millions and millions of dollars on these out-of-state monitors that I think we could start solving this problem if we had step-down facilities. And in the ledge, we're trying to do everything we can, but this is we didn't get into this problem overnight, and it's not going to be easy to get out of it overnight.
Senator Menendez, some of these children in Texas foster care are being transferred out of the state for care in Florida, Missouri, Arkansas, Colorado, and Kansas. What are these other states doing right that Texas can't do?
I think that part of it is that they're funding the facilities that we need. You know, I know that the judge said she doesn't want us to call them high acuity and need children, but many of these kids have so many issues that you just can't put them into someone's foster care home. They need to go somewhere where they have professionals that can understand how to help these kids be safe to themselves and be safe to other kids. The reasons that sometimes you have abuses occur is because you have kids who have very high needs, and they're in they're mixed into a facility with kids that are too young for them to be with. And then you say, well, split them up. Well, what if they're a group of siblings that you don't want to split up? And so this is not a simple thing, but I think one of the things we have not done is fund step down facilities enough, and we have not funded high acuity facilities enough to keep their doors open to all these problems.
And Senator, one last question. It's a reaction to a Facebook message that we got from Meredith. Sure would like to see the pro-life folks out there put some energy, money, and thought into how many children end up in foster care system because their parents couldn't care for them. They're here and they need to be championed. Pro-life, we hear about it all the time with the leadership in Texas. Is this a pro-life issue?
Absolutely. That's one of the most frustrating things that I experienced in the legislature over the last many years I've been there, is that people will you know, be angry and fight you over the issue of having a child being born. But it's almost as if they forget once it's born that child needs good nutrition, needs education, needs care, the needs are not gone. They've only increased. And so it's not enough to be pro-life. We have got to be, if you want to say you're pro-life, prove it. Be against the death penalty. Be there for kids at every step of their life and invest in their well-being at every step of their life, not just when they're in the womb.
All right. Texas Senator Jose Menendez, thank you for calling in. We appreciate your input. And I think we do now have Alfonso on the line. Alfonso, sorry about the mix-up. You're on the air.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, the question I was saying, I'm kind of nervous about this because the first time I'm calling into the station. But we were foster parents maybe, say, 10 years, 15 years ago. And for a reason that we couldn't be foster care foster parents because we never went through a process of schooling or showing us the things that we needed to know and understand about the children that we were fostering. But it was, I guess it was a last minute thing that the CPS sent two kids to the house because we were on a list. You know, so we were just on a list, but we didn't go through the process of screening or anything like that. But we opened our house to these two kids. We had them for 15 months, and we finally said, "Well, we did a lot for them. We didn't ask for money from the government. We didn't ask for anything. We were providing ourselves mm-hmm. the medical, the food, the schooling, the clothes, and everything that came with it. We gave them a lot of love. And support. We got support from the school because their grades were going up and they look fantastic. But now that we had tried to adopt, and I was saying like about 10 years ago, that we tried to adopt, the father came out of the woodwork, came from hiding, and he decided that he wanted the kids back. Not that he saw that they were.
Mm-hmm. Alfonso, thank you so much for the call. Will Francis, how hard is it for people to become foster care parents? And what Alfonso went through is not typical.
Well, it's a pretty intensive set of trainings. There's a lot of requirements that have to come, and each foster agency does it a little bit different. But there's some overall core pieces they need to teach you. There's also issues of safety about how you maintain the home, how kids have access to certain. When it comes to medications, when it comes to other things that are risky, and some of those can be somewhat restrictive. You always hear the foster parent who said, well, they would come in and count the number of socks I had, and it was the little rules that sort of drove me away. So I think reform in the foster care training area is important. I think, though, beyond that, what happens in many times is, though, we find family, and we do find parents, and we do find, or pardon me, we do aunts and uncles and grandparents especially, and we put the kids there. And while I so appreciate what Alfonso was saying about they were doing this out of love and wanted to support them, it is expensive to raise a child. I have three kids of my own, and they are wonderful and amazing, and they cost me a lot of money. And we have to recognize that kids who come into the system often have even greater needs, and sometimes it's traveling to see parents and others. So I think this investment in kids will pay off if we put it into the caregivers. And sometimes that'll be foster families, and sometimes that'll be residential treatment, but other times it will be kinship. And we have to look at giving some dollars and giving some real resources to those families that are willing to step up and take care of these kids.
So Reese Ochsner, breaking news reporter for the Texas Tribune, who's been covering these hearings on the Texas foster care. They've been talking a lot about these unlicensed facilities. What do they mean by unlicensed facilities, and how are they staffed?
Sure. And so unlicensed facilities is just kind of an umbrella term for any facility that hasn't been licensed by the state to care for children. And so it's not something that's supposed to be happening. And it's happened for years and years, but we're just seeing a larger number of children in these unlicensed placements.
Is that what they mean when they say kids are sleeping in the office?
Exactly. Yes. So CPS offices aren't licensed for childcare. They're not supposed to be sleeping there. You know, it can also be community organizations, churches, hotels, motels. And the problem is that it often doesn't come with 24-hour supervision, or you're asking caseworkers who aren't trained to provide that level of supervision to watch children and take that on top of their other duties and on top of a full workday as well.
So when they say sleeping in the office, does that mean they're like sleeping in someone's cubicle, or do they have bunks or something?
Sure. So I think it really can depend on the office. I mean, there's not a clear standard because it's not supposed to be happening. And so some of the aged out foster children that we've talked to at the Tribune have said, you know, sometimes it's in a chair, sometimes it's on like a mat in a meeting room. And so I think it really is different on a case from case basis.
Representative Mijares, when they say we don't have the facilities, we're not equipped for it because it's not supposed to be happening, but it is happening and it's happening more and more. That makes me frustrated.
It is frustrating. And you know, here's the thing: when the state of Texas steps in and removes a child, the state of Texas is taking responsibility for the basic needs and the safety and welfare of that child. And so, you know, when you don't have a place to put them, you're not, it's just not, we're taking on a responsibility, and we need to resolve this issue. And again, the situation has gotten worse. And my frustration is, you know, when the state transitioned, when the legislature went into a community-based model, the situation was, look, communities can take responsibility and invest in these children. But what's happened is the system is failing. And so now we've got to figure out a way how to fix it. And I just hope that leadership understands we cannot wait anymore. We have to be proactive. We have to make meaningful change here,
right?
Because it's going to get progressively worse, and we're responsible because we're taking the kids.
I got to hit this break. We're going to come right back. Linda, hang on. I'll get you on the air right after we come back. 833-TPR-TALK. It's The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Texas foster care system needs help. The legislature was able to give it some more money, but will that be enough? It may need some real leadership in order to fix these problems. We've got a question or a comment. Call in 833-TPR-TALK. We have Linda with us, and Linda, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I used to be, I know some of your speakers too, I used to be the foster adoption recruiter for the agency. I am now retired from CPS, and I am an advocate for children with an agency. I tend to agree with the doctor who said this is the worst situation I have seen. And I think that it is not the result of the court. It is partially the result of the community-based scheme that was put into effect that Ina mentioned briefly. And it does need to be addressed. It needs to be addressed immediately. A couple of things I'd like to mention that haven't been mentioned. Those offices where the kids are staying, they generally stay in one of the larger spaces within the area. There are no showers. There are no play areas outside. There's some modified play areas, you know, inside in some of them.
And how old? Like 5 years old or 13 years old or how old?
Well, I think they tend to be older. I get a lot of this information from caseworkers. I speak to a great variety of caseworkers. And, I mean, at different times you have kids of different ages. Some kids are in hotels. You're aware of that, right? And in some of those instances, they have to be two-on-one with those kids. Those kids are very difficult. And so having them in a hotel room by themselves, two employees have to stay with them because they are difficult children, let's put it that way. And they can be physically difficult. So you do have this wide variety of kids that come into care. That's one issue. Another issue or a solution that a worker suggested to me, and these workers are not allowed to come on these programs or even speak to the legislators, so I'm passing this along. But one of the workers made a very good comment to me and said that these very difficult kids should be in facilities that are managed directly by the state. That would take some time to do, but, you know, it makes a lot of sense to me because then you can begin to have the requirements for training, the requirements that some of the private agencies were unable to meet, because they care for children who are simpler to care for.
Linda, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate that. Let me get a reaction from State Representative Ina Mijares, Democrat representing the Texas House District 124 here in San Antonio. In the reporting, I've read that there's one of the problems is that there is a child-on-child sex abuse. They need supervision. Of course, you know, we know that these kids have been traumatized, they have probably been sexually abused as well, and then they act out. Hurt people. And so that's an issue there.
That is an issue. You know, that is one of the constant issues I've seen or problems at many of these facilities, and it's because of the lack of a constant supervision. And whether these placements should be made in the first place. So, no, that is a continued issue. And again, the liability lies with the state of Texas. When the state of Texas steps in and removes a child from their family and takes possession of these kids, the liability is with the state, and they can no longer just say, oh, there's a problem, we're just going to move that child. There has been trauma there. If you know, the sexual abuse that has happened, it is a state's responsibility to first get that child help and then see to it that that child's needs are met. But again, the liability lies with the state when the state decides to step in and remove a child and take custody of that child.
Reese Oxner, Texas Tribune, we've been covering this there. The pandemic, COVID, how has that impacted? We're hearing it's worse. This situation is worse than ever before. Is that because of the pandemic or for other things? We've had this problem a long time. Can't blame it on the pandemic, but has it made it worse?
Yeah, so we're hearing providers say that the pandemic exacerbated some of the issues, as did the winter storm we saw in February.
How did the winter storm do it?
Just from disrupting, right, whether it's a foster family being able to start having kids or just other infrastructure problems. The two things to note, I think, for both of those things is just it's much less of an impact than what we're seeing from just not having enough beds from facilities closing down or from facilities being closed down.
So there was a lost foster care beds during COVID, some potential foster parents saying things are so chaotic right now, we don't want to have this also happening simultaneously. Let's go to Jane on the phones. Hey, Jane, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment that I used to work for the state of Texas over, I guess, 10 years ago. And I remember going to my boss and saying, you know, all these case managers, that they were stressed. The workload was ridiculous, the amount of cases that they handled. And I remember telling my boss, I said, we're doing a disservice to the children of Texas. And all he told me was, until there is an outcry from the public, nothing is going to change. And hearing you guys talk about this today is giving me a little hope, because that was over 10 years ago, and it was very distressing working for the state of Texas. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in, Jane. Will Francis at the National Association for Social Workers. When Texas takes a child away from a family, they're saying this child is in danger in this family, we have to remove them and put them in foster care, even though we know foster care is not working the way it's supposed to be doing. I mean, how bad does it have to be for them to make that decision to remove that child?
It has to be bad. We have different levels of removal qualifications, be it neglect, be it physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse. A court will intervene. They'll make the determination that the child should be removed, and then they'll be placed in another placement. And I think you really hit the nail on the head. How do we have a system that in some ways has more perils than a space where a child is in active abuse? And I have colleagues that work in the homeless, working with homeless youth, and they say that a kid who they find on the streets who's come through the foster care system is almost always worse off than one who got there outside the system. They have less tools, they have less abilities to sort of do things on their own, they have less overall resources that they've had themselves. They've had all of these pieces around them that just have not supported their growth for independent living. And I think that right there is just such an enormous indictment of the system, that in some ways these kids are leaving worse off than when they entered. And if we really don't bring some more resources to this, we're going to just keep on seeing it.
Looking at the records, I see that we've had kids go into foster care and they are dying. One drowned, hit by a car, overdosed on Tylenol, beaten to death. A 15-year-old girl was placed with a known human trafficker and she ended up dead. Let's go to Shahab on the phones. Shahab, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the
air. Are you there?
Yes.
I'm a foster and an adoptive parent, and I just see a lot of everybody playing game in each other. At the end of the day, when a child is removed from a dangerous situation, CPS officers doing it during the middle of the day or after work. And at that point, they're having a call, few of the agencies trying to place that child, you know, with a family at night. That's what happened to us, you know, 7 or 8 times. So if they can't place it overnight, yes, they're going to end up having to sleep with a child, or, you know, find a place for that child to sleep, probably in an office. So unless, you know, the judges, these caretakers are willing to, you know, all step in. And if a child doesn't have a place to stay, call the judge. Can he spend the night with you or a caregiver or somebody else? Otherwise, quit blaming each other. I mean, you know, they're being removed from a dangerous situation. You know, that's what I got to say.
Well, thank you for calling in. We appreciate that. Reese Ochsner at the Texas Tribune, what's happening next?
So we're waiting to see, really. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, the judges ending the hearing early and announcing her new plan didn't come with a formal court order. It was definitely something that was unexpected as far as the people watching the hearing. And so we're really waiting to see what comes out of that. From her own words, you know, she's waiting on kind of a sign off from the governor saying that this plan sounds good. Everyone at the court seemed to be on board to discuss solutions. And so we're really waiting to see what kind of form that could take next.
In recent, in December 2020, the judge held the state of Texas in contempt, threatened to fine the state $75,000 per day if the state didn't show that the things were being improved. What happened to that?
So I would have to double check just because I haven't re-upped that specific thing. But as far as I know, there's still that the contempt order hasn't been lifted. And so we're likely still seeing fines related to that order.
State Representative Ina Mahadez, you're trying to take point on this and lead the legislature for bipartisan solutions. Is everyone ready to come together and find those solutions?
Well, I can speak, you know, in terms of the House members. We most definitely are. I know Senator Menendez, you know, takes the lead on foster care issues, along with Senator Corkost on the Senate side. I know that we stand ready. And again, I'm optimistic with the approach Judge Jack took in terms of extending her hand to the governor and coming up with solutions, because at the end of the day, it's about the kids. We're all responsible. They're in our care, and we're ready to move forward.
All right. We got to wrap up the show. I want to thank State Representative Ina Mijares, a Democrat representing Texas House District 124 here in San Antonio. Reese Ochsner, he's a breaking news reporter for the Texas Tribune. Will Francis, he is a social worker, executive director of the Texas chapter of the National Association of Social Workers. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chen. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.